From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Tuesday, April 19th, 2016, and as always, we have a great show in store for you throughout this entire hour. Of course, we will give you all a preview of tonight's Game 4 between the Detroit Red Wings and the Tampa Bay Lightning in the Stanley Cup playoffs first round. Of course, Detroit Red Wings with a huge win on Sunday. Again, battling back and avoiding a 3-0 hole in the first round against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And we will be inviting Helene St. James, Detroit Red Wings beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, as Helene will give us a preview of what we can expect tonight. And also, she will give her thoughts on what has occurred so far throughout this series. Also, Stan Van Gundy is going to have to write a check to the National Basketball Association for $25,000. I think you know why, but we will discuss that as well. And also, not one but two Michigan State football players have been dismissed from the program. Find out who they are in just a sec. And also on the back end of the show, we, of course, will talk about some funny moments in the world of sports with our Tuesday segment entitled Tickle Tuesday. And a former U of M football coach is having the back of Jim Harbaugh, the current U of M football coach, when it comes to, of course, what other subject other than satellite camps. Folks, our phone lines are open. Call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 if you want to be a part of today's show. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, folks, we start with news coming out of the camp of the Michigan State football team. Michigan State sophomore defensive lineman Craig Evans and Montez Sweat have left the Spartans football team for, quote, personal reasons. Now, the school said this in a news release on Monday night. Michigan State University gave no further details. Evans, a 6'2", 307-pound defensive tackle from Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, played in all 14 games for the Spartans last year and made 21 tackles, including 13 in MSU's final six games. Sweat, a 6'6", 230-pound defensive end from Stone Mountain, Georgia, was suspended from the team in September for unspecified reasons. D'Antonio said last Tuesday that Sweat remained in limbo. Again, all we know as of right now is that Evans and Sweat are no longer with the program. We do not know why. We'll have more discussion on that in just a second. Though he didn't mention Michigan or Coach Jim Harbaugh by name, former U of M coach Rich Rodriguez, now coaching at Arizona, came down on the Wolverine side of the increasingly contentious issue concerning satellite camps in comments to Arizona reporters as posted on Tucson.com. Quote, I don't know how that rule passed so quickly. I understand if we table it and look after it for a year, but to table it because a few SEC or ACC schools don't want to have it is not fair to a lot of coaches, a lot of programs, and more importantly, the student athletes, end quote. Rich Rodriguez, who was planning camps all over California with other stops in Hawaii, Arizona, and other states, according to the story, he left no illusion where he stood. We'll have more on that also on the show. All right, transfer guard from Michigan, Spike Albrick, has narrowed down his list of schools that he is now considering. Jeff Goodman of ESPN tweeted this, quote, Michigan grad transfer Spike Albrick told ESPN that he's looking at Purdue, Wichita State, Indiana, Texas A&M, Syracuse, USC, and Milwaukee. Now, Purdue is a bit more than an hour from Albrick's home in Crown Point, Indiana, and Milwaukee is interesting because, if you remember, former U of M assistant Lavelle Jordan just took over there. Now, Jordan also is facing departures from his program, so having Albrick would help. All right, Jim Harbaugh is branching out. The Michigan football coach reportedly will join the new Leaders Council of the Legal Services Corporation. Now, the group will, quote, raise awareness of the need for increased funding for civil legal services for the poor, end quote, and will be introduced today at, get this, the White House. How cool is that? Now, there are a few prominent attorneys on the council, as well as non-lawyers such as Harbaugh and Viacom Vice Chairman Sherry Redstone. Now, the intent of today's summit, the fifth annual, is to show the gap in funding for civil legal aid. I kid you not, folks, dating back to last week, I don't think we've gone a day here during our current sports quick hit headliners where Jim Harbaugh hasn't been a part of them. Unbelievable stuff. All right. Former Spartan All-American Chris Williams has been named assistant wrestling coach. First-year head coach Roger Chandler announced that on Monday. Now, Williams has served as the head wrestling coach at Adrian College since November of 2014, where he restarted the program and led the Bulldogs in their first season of competition in 31 years in 2015-16. Now, he previously was an assistant coach at Michigan State along with Chandler for 8 seasons. It's another must-win for the Detroit Red Wings. Well, kind of. It's not necessarily do or die, but I tell you what, folks, 2-2 sounds a whole heck of a lot better than 3-1, doesn't it? Now, the Wings played arguably their most complete game of the season on Sunday night. Puck drop is set for 7 p.m., and the game can be seen, of course, on Fox Sports Detroit. During the Detroit Pistons' loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers on Sunday in game one of the first round of the NBA playoffs, Stan Van Gundy, head coach of the Pistons, had some comments about how LeBron James was being officiated. Specifically, he said that LeBron, quote, gets to do what he wants, end quote, in regards to offensive foul calls. Now, SVG tried to walk the comments back after the game, but the cat was out of the bag when Monday the NBA fined Van Gundy, get this, $25,000 for his comments. And last but certainly not least, the Detroit Tigers begin a 3-game road series today against the Kansas City Royals. Kansas City has built an 8-4 record on the back of their pitching staff, which has held opponents to fewer than 3 runs per game on the young season. Shane Green versus Yordano Ventura tonight at 7:15 p.m. Without further ado, how about we start the show? Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy Tuesday. I know it's not like Monday was, all right? Man, was yesterday gorgeous or what? 80 degrees. Oh, absolutely beautiful. Not a cloud in the sky. The sun was shining. It was great. I really hope you guys enjoyed that, but snap back to reality, right? Lower 60 today. Cloudy. At least it's not snowing, all right? You know, try to look at it, you know, with a glass half full, all right, mentality. So I hope you guys are having a great start to your week. That is the time. Morris Day and the Time. Gosh, one of the most, I really believe that Morris Day and the Time has to be one of the most underrated groups in music history. I truly believe that. They used to, you know, funny story, Isaac, first off, do you know who The Time is? I gotta test your knowledge here when it comes to music. I know you're a big hip-hop guy, but are you a big R&B guy at all?
I'm not a big R&B guy. No? I actually don't know him, no.
Oh, Morris Day and The Time. If you want to listen to some good music, check out The Time, dude. They are all absolutely right. Unbelievable. But check this, man. So The Time, they used to actually open up for none other than Prince. That was one of Prince's groups, okay?
And okay, you can kinda tell. Hear this. I can hear the connection there.
Right, you hear it now? Because, you know, Prince has a certain sound, right? But, you know, in one of the books I was reading about Prince back in the day, and what I saw was actually Prince used to get upset because The Time used to come out, right? And they were so good that they would rile up the crowd so much and get them so in tune during the concert that Prince, being the prima donna that Prince is, that he would get a little bit upset, like, okay, you're doing too much here, okay? The Time, they were that good, dude. So if you want to check out some good music, man, that's your homework assignment today. Check out The Time. And it popped on my Sirius XM radio yesterday when I was driving around. I'm like, yeah, that's got to be my intro for today's show. So, yeah, check him out, though. Unbelievable.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, now I want to get to, of course, what you heard in that montage. Mixed in with that montage was, of course, the voice of Stan Van Gundy during his interview with Lisa Salters of ESPN. Of course, game one of the NBA playoffs between the Detroit Pistons and the Cleveland Cavaliers, the 1-8 seed, happened to take place on Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. And during the game, going into the second quarter, Lisa had talked with Stan, and Stan was a bit frustrated as to the calls that were not taking place when it comes to LeBron James and, his offensive aggressiveness, if you will. And we had mentioned it. We mentioned this, of course, on yesterday's show. And when we got the news today, as I stated in our headliners, that Stan Van Gundy is now fined $25,000 for his comments concerning LeBron James over-aggressiveness. And as you just heard, what Stan Van had to say was a direct hit at LeBron James and the referees. Quote, they've got to understand LeBron's LeBron. They're not going to call offensive fouls on him. He gets to do whatever he wants. And, you know, end quote. And, you know, Van Gundy wasn't wrong. Let's be real here. And I'd stated this on yesterday's show as well. You know, we all know that if you are a superstar in the NBA, you are going to get away with a few calls here and there, okay? Whether it be on both sides of the basketball, whether you are a bit over-aggressive and pushing off with your off-arm, the referees are going to swallow that whistle. Or, on the contrary, if you're defending somebody and you are a bit over-aggressive and slapping on some hands and whatnot, the referees are going to look at you and say, okay, that's LeBron James. We're going to let him play. He's LeBron James. That happens all the time in the NBA. So Stan Van basically addressed the elephant in the room, which we all knew. We all knew. And watching the two plays that he's specifically talking about, in which LeBron had the basketball and he's pushing off on his off arm, you know, were clearly offensive fouls. And you heard during the broadcast, Mark Jansen, Jeff Van Gundy, Stan Van Gundy's brother, actually, and Mike Breen clearly called out and say, yeah, that should have been called. But LeBron's LeBron. And the thing about the NBA is they put a muzzle on you. Anytime you criticize the referees to the media, they're going to attack your wallet. Simple as that, folks. There's countless examples of that very notion that have occurred in recent history in the NBA. They are going to attack your wallet if you go out your way to criticize the referees in officiating. Similarly to the NFL. Same thing with the NFL. I mean, if a head coach goes in a press conference and says, hey, you know what? The referees were absolutely horrible. The NFL is going to attack your wallet and you will be writing a check. Simple as that. And, you know, after the game, Van Gundy certainly tried to backtrack. And, you know, he was absolutely right. And he realized that he was wrong for making the statement that he did during that interview. It was in the moment. And this is another layer to this conversation as well, Isaac. Because you've seen many, many times the one head coach in the NBA who just hates. He hates those during-the-game interviews. Like, he despises it so much that whenever he's asked a question, you barely get anything, any insight out of it. And I think the most that I've seen him indulge during those post-game press conferences, well, those in-game interviews, I should say, is when, of course, Craig Sager of the NBA on TNT, who is going through the battle with cancer right now. Again, prayers out to Sager and his family. But, you know, they have such an interesting relationship that I've seen multiple times, you know, Sager interview Greg Popovich, and Greg Popovich, you know, sort of indulge him a little bit and give him some, you know, give him some insight as to what he's thinking during that moment. But Greg Popovich of the San Antonio Spurs, he has been a huge advocate of interviews not taking place during the game. And I got to be honest, I kind of feel him on that. I mean, you're trying to do your job. You're out there in the heat of the moment in the playoffs, for goodness sake. This is a team in the Pistons that haven't made the playoffs in 7 years, but yet you have to deal with a sideline reporter coming up to you and asking you pretty obvious questions. I mean, these questions aren't really giving you, you know, this tremendous inside look into what a coach is thinking at the moment. They're pretty obvious questions that you can pretty much guess what the coach is going to say. You know, so, you know, I get it. You know, it's really a part of what the media has become now when looking at the on-television experience, the at-home experience when watching a game. First off, you get all these camera angles. Everything is in HD. And you get these interviews that are during the game, and you sit there and say, wow, you can't beat this coverage, even if you are sitting right there and watching the game in person. In many ways, the at-home experience has become more intriguing than the at-game experience. But I just feel like the in-game interview should not be a requirement for a head coach because, again, this guy is just trying to do his job and go out there and win a basketball game, and he has to deal with a mic being stuck in his face during play? I don't get that. So I totally get it. And, again, when you're in the heat of the moment, sometimes you can say stuff that you instantly regret. And that's exactly what happened to Stan Van. He popped off at the mouth. LeBron James gets to do whatever he wants. I'm sure when that red light went off on that camera and Stan Van walked back to his bench to address his team going into the second quarter, he probably said to himself, oh, I shouldn't have said that. I regret that. So, you know, Van Gundy right afterwards, he did regret it. And, you know, he was right for deflecting attention away from any refereeing after his halftime comments. So this is actually after halftime. After his halftime comments, got a lot of it. The Pistons were only down 2, actually, when Van Gundy made his comments. Up at 5 at the half and lost a 7-point lead in the fourth quarter without any shooting fouls called either way. But let's be clear here. Let's be clear here. The Pistons did not lose that game due to poor refereeing. Were there some questionable calls? Certainly. But you can say that in any game, folks. You're going to have blunders. But the Pistons didn't lose that game because of a non-call on LeBron. All right? Call in, folks. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You know what? Why not? Let's take an early call here. Let's go to line one right now. We've got Jody from Canada who wants to chime in on the Detroit Pistons. Jody, haven't heard from you in a while. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing good. How you doing? Hey, Al, what song did you intro? I missed the intro. I heard you talking about it.
Oh, man, I had to start off today's show with Morris Day and the Time. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know that song, Cool?
Oh,
I love
cool,
it.
Cool, ain't nobody bad like. Oh, come on.
My
now.
Man, look at you. Yeah, look at you. You're a regular Morris Day, Jody.
Jeez, I should have been on key, too, hitting that note. Honey, honey, can't you see you?
There come you go. Now. Look at Jody getting down. My man. Yeah, it's one of my favorite tracks from the Time.
Yeah, you know, they're touring with Cool and the Gang and Bootsy, but they're not out. You know, they're supposed, Bootsy and all those guys are coming to freedom. Boosie Collins, not little Boosie.
Oh, wow.
You know, Boosie Collins, yeah, and Kool and the Gang and Dougie Fresh. Because we were looking at concerts to go to. We had just got back from Johnny Gill last Thursday. We drove down to Detroit to see Johnny Gill.
Oh, man, those are all classic artists right there,
yeah,
Jody.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys enjoyed that concert from Mr. Gill.
Yeah, oh, man, yeah, Johnny put on a show, and, you know, my wife was standing up the whole time just smiling and laughing. And yeah.
So, nice. Yeah. It takes you back,
yeah,
doesn't it?
But, yeah, put a smile. I'm still smiling, man, you know.
I bet.
I think we're going to go see Maxwell, or now she wants to see New Edition because we done seen Johnny. So, you know, I got to finagle some New Edition tickets, you know.
Nice.
So, yeah.
That should be
but
fun.
I want to talk about the Pistons, you know.
Yeah, go ahead.
They no calls and all that, even though I didn't like LeBron hitting Drummond with that elbow on a layup that he made, you know. It looked like he was intentionally, you know, he put his elbow out, but okay, no big deal. But their problem really is one or two things. You got to run the Cavs. The Cavs got older legs. Even if they're younger guys, those legs have been in a lot of battles.
Right. Very true. Very true. And you know, we read your comment, because I know you commented on my Facebook page, Jody, and we read your comment about that on yesterday's show. But, yeah, it's very true. I mean, you have to push the basketball. And that's something that we haven't – you know, when the Pistons push the basketball, Jody, we've seen multiple times throughout this season. They've had much success in doing this, especially when you have a slasher in Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson is pretty good on the break.
Right, right. You know, and the other thing, I don't know if I told you, I wrote it – I don't know, they have to at least get their hands up and deflect some passes. Cleveland, you know, who kind of runs a deliberate offense, only turned the ball over four times.
Right, exactly.
You know, I don't know if I wrote that on your page, but, you know, you gotta at least play a little bit of defense, because, you know, you can't give up. You know, you can't have a team commit four turnovers. I don't care if it's, you know, who it is. If it's, you know, if it's the Spartans, if it's anybody, you know, if you don't create, turn a team over, you got problems.
Very true. And you know what? The Pistons, you know, not only did they, you know, really just hand the game to the Cavs in the waning moments with turnovers, I thought the penetration defense could have been better. And also, you know, when you look at the Cavs converting 12 offensive rebounds into 20 second chance points, you can't give the Cavs second chances to put the basketball up in the hoop. They will burn you most of the time. So I totally agree. And again, you're going back to the turnovers. I mean, the Cavs scored 19 points off of 12 Piston turnovers. That can't happen, Jody.
Yeah, but the Pistons didn't create any turnovers, you know, against the, you know, they didn't get the Cavs to turn the ball over. The Cavs could come down and pretty much do whatever they wanted as far as running through their offense and first, second option. Like you said, they rebounded. But, you know, I don't know if they'll beat the Cavs now, because, you know, the things just didn't seem real. You know, the Pistons and maybe the NBA thinks they're happy to be there, even though they beat them 3 out of 4. But they could beat the Cavaliers. You know, and all my buddies from Youngstown are already, from Ohio, are already starting to, you know, send the messages at me, you know, because they're still mad about football season. You know,
I bet.
Cats still talking about the, we should have been in the playoffs and y'all got in. I'm like, man, come on. And I said, you guys couldn't perform in your house when it was time.
They are still giving you the blues, you know, Jody. And did you see at Ohio State's spring game, they had near 100,000 people come out for the spring game, Jody, so they're ready. They're ready to kick off right now.
Oh, man, you have seen nothing, unless you've been to, like, Alabama or places like that, until you were either raised or spent time in Ohio around football. When we were growing up, man, you know, it was so crazy. We won the state back in the 70s. They had an hour-long show on us.
Right.
On the TV show, TV hour-long special, and they had parades and all kind of crazy stuff, man, and, you know, four or five different banquets at all the different hotels, and, you know, it was crazy. I thought, like, wow.
Yeah.
Coming up to Michigan State, it was, I'm not going to say it was a letdown because it was more people and more, but, you know, the craziness about the sport, you know, in Ohio is unlike no other, man, as far as, you know, except maybe Alabama and Texas, you know.
Right, that is certainly true. So I'm interested to see, and I'm sure D'Antonio is going to address it today. Actually, when it comes to Michigan State's spring game, which will take place, of course, this Saturday, there will be a draft that will take place at actually 2:20. I'll be heading out to Spartan Stadium right after we get off the air today. They're going to have the draft for both the green and the white team. And then at 3 o'clock, around 3 o'clock, I want to say 3:30-ish, they're going to open up practice for the first 10 minutes to the media, and Mark D'Antonio will speak. And I'm curious to see what his goal is as far as attendance-wise for this Saturday spring game. I know last year it was 50,000. They came just short of that, so maybe he throws out that number again. I'm curious.
Wow, man, we used to play spring games in front of, if we were lucky, 10, 15, you know, 8, 10, you know, because, yeah, wow. So, I mean, you know, the interest is high, you know.
It is.
I see them, they, you know, quarterback, they'll probably run the ball a lot with the new quarterback, you know, one or two quarterbacks. And I think the biggest thing that's going to happen with them is offense. You gotta offensive line gotta come too. As far as by that, I mean, you know, when you – and against the Big Ten, we know how to beat each other. You know, the Big Ten knows because the coaches have been coaching against each other for so long.
Right, right. I agree.
You know, so you it's like basketball. You know how to beat, you know, Painter. You know how to beat, you know, such a, you know, like he must, you know, we must know how to beat Urban Meyer. We've beaten him a few times, you know, when nobody else has. But when you get into the big spotlight, I think the, you know, the two-star the two-star linemen. And I'm not going to say that because I was probably a two- or three-star if they didn't have stars back then. They just recruited, you know.
Right.
You
right.
Know, wasn't all them doggone, you know, recruiting companies. They just recruited you and you either played or you sat the bench. You know, wasn't no eight or nine linemen being used. It was, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that the offensive tackles and the guards, you know, at the Alabama game, it was exposed. That's all. You know, but the young boys probably, you know, they probably got that chip on their shoulder and they're getting ready for another year. So, you know, I wish them the best and I'll probably be at homecoming this year. So if I do, I'll come stop in. Since I'm a communications graduate of, you know, the College of Communications, I should at least pop into that new building every now and then.
Yes, please do. Yeah, yeah. Definitely hit me up, Jody. I look forward to that, my friend.
All right. Okay, man. Take care, Al.
All right.
Go ahead, Piston. So, you know, like I say, just so I don't have to hear from my friends in Ohio.
There you go. Well said, Jody. Appreciate the call, my friend.
All right. Take care, man. And get Isaac listening to some time.
Yes.
I told him, go ahead and get it on Wikipedia and YouTube or whatever.
Yes.
Throw on some more.
He's about to be enlightened today. Trust me.
There you go.
All right, Jody.
Take care. All right.
Oh, gotta love Jody. Again, folks, if you want to weigh in on today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And that's a great segue. Great thoughts from Jody when it comes to the Pistons. I agree. They got to push the ball more. And also, when you talk about spring football here, again, if you didn't catch the news last night or haven't seen it across your media paper, whatever you read, the Free Press, you know, or the Detroit News or online somewhere, but news broke last night that Michigan State, the football program, has dismissed, again, sophomore defensive lineman Craig Evans and Montez Sweat. They have left the Spartans football team for, quote, personal reasons. Now, again, we don't know exactly what happened, so you really can't comment on this. We know that when it comes to Sweat, you know, he was suspended from the team in September for unspecified reasons. So he's been in the doghouse for quite some time. So it came to no surprise that Sweat was in hot water and he would no longer be a part of this program. But Evans, you know, a 6'2", 307-pound defensive tackle from Wisconsin, he played in all 14 games for the Spartans last season, made 21 tackles, 13 in Michigan State's final six games. His name was thrown around as one of the big names to really make an impact this upcoming season. So it's going to be a tough loss for Michigan State. But again, you know, Michigan State lives on that next man up mentality. It's going to be an interesting year, though, Isaac, because there are a lot of moving parts that were a part of this squad last year that are no longer part of the squad this year because of graduation. There's going to be a lot of players put into new positions, into new spotlight. And I'm curious, because when you look at, you know, the position like quarterback, of course, that's the big elephant in the room. Tyler O'Connor, Damian Terry, you got Brian Lewerke, Messiah DeWeaver, you know, also in the mix when looking at that position. Wide receiver, you know, new guys stepping into new roles there. We, of course, know about the rave reviews that, you know, Detroit wide receiver Donnie Corley, who's an incoming freshman, we all know about the rave reviews he has been getting. When it comes to the line, you know, Brian Allen, the only preseason all Big Ten candidate for the offensive line, and on the defensive line, you know, it really lacks some depth right now. You know, three starters leaving after graduation. They lost six of the starters from last year's season opening game, so they dealt with some injuries looking at the very beginning of last year, you know, and big names when discussing that defensive line are guys like Malik McDowell and Craig Evans. But it's going to be so interesting, and I always say this, it's just spring here, folks. It's just a spring game. There is a lot that can happen between right now in April as opposed to September, you know, when they play that opening game on September 2nd against Furman. There's a lot that can happen. So I don't read too much into spring practice, even though you do get a glimpse of what kind of talent the Spartans have coming in next year.
Yeah, and these were two big prospects for MSU, two guys who were kind of primed for success this year. A lot of the media was heralding them as the next guys to almost step up in this line position. You mentioned Craig Evans more than anyone else. Then you've got Sweat, who's gone through his fair share of injuries and also suspension. But at the same time, he too was a highly touted prospect. So these are big losses. At the same time, this is where recruiting comes into play. So I'd expect some of the 2016 recruits who are just freshmen, and it's tough for freshmen to find time on a football field their rookie season. But I'd expect Naquan Jones out of Ohio maybe to make an impact at that defensive tackle position. Then you've also got Josh King and Austin Robertson, as well as Mike Panacek. So I'd expect all of these guys maybe to see varying amounts of playing time throughout the year. And who knows, those guys might step up and MSU might breed another star.
Exactly. Folks, call in. What do you think about the Michigan State spring game? And what's really a realistic number as far as attendance goes for the spring game, which will take place against this Saturday at Spartan Stadium? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. When we come back, we will be chatting with Helene St. James, Detroit Red Wings beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. She will give us a preview of game four tonight, and she'll also give her thoughts on what she has seen thus far in this series between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Detroit Red Wings. That and more. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, we talked about the Detroit Pistons before our first break, and now we transition into a discussion on Game 4 between the Detroit Red Wings and the Tampa Bay Lightning at the Joe tonight at 7 p.m. And as I stated at the top of the hour, folks, it's not do or die, but I tell you what, 2-2 sounds a whole heck of a lot better than 3-1. The Wings played arguably their most complete game of the season on Sunday night. It was a great outing at the Joe, great atmosphere. And right now on the line, we have an individual who knows a thing or two about this Detroit Red Wings team. Her name is Helene St. James, Detroit Red Wings beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. Helene, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm terrific, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. And first off, I want to start, Helene, when looking at Game 3, on Sunday night, and I want to just dive into that coaching decision by Jeff Blashill to switch from Jimmy Howard to Peter Mrazek. How surprising was that change for you before the game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jimmy was not the problem with the two games in Tampa Bay, but you know, Jeff was looking for a way to just shake things up, and Peter Mrazek, you know, I mean, he ended up, as John Cooper said, barely being a factor someday. He saw only 16 shots. But even when he doesn't see a lot of pucks, he's so good playing the puck himself that they spend less time in their own zone, and he's quick on his feet. So I think that's just an advantage that he gives you, and that's why it is to the benefit that he's back in that. I mean, it was a little iffy, you know, what's he going to bring you after the way he ended the season. But, you know, in the little work he saw, he looked like he was back on his feet.
So with this change now, Helene, do you think that the starting goalie for Game 4 tonight will be Peter, or is it Jimmy? Does he throw Jimmy back in there?
No, it'll be Peter until Peter gives them a reason not to play him.
Okay, gotcha. And has Jimmy Howard commented at all on the change? And what does that change mean in terms of Jeff Blashill as a coach? Because to me, Helene, it kind of signifies that, hey, Jeff is not afraid to try different things if something else isn't working out. Now, I think that's really key during the postseason for the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, you know, absolutely. And what does it mean for Jimmy? You know, I mean, if Peter is a restricted free agent, they were always going to re-sign him. Jimmy Howard has a cap hit of $5.3 million. That's a lot. You know, they're going to have to give Peter a nice raise. So, you know, now at the very least, you know, Howard has improved his trade value with the way he played down the stretch. But, you know, they hung on to him for a reason, too, because they didn't have a good enough backup in the system. So, you know, that'll play its way out over the summer. And just as far as making decisions, you know what I mean? I thought all along Brendan Smith should have been playing, and, you know, he made an impact right away in Game 3 with that kind of tone-setting hit. The key with him is, you know, he can hurt you by some of the decisions he's making. That's what he really, really has to be careful about. But overall, for the team, you know, probably the biggest difference, one of the biggest differences was that they stayed out of the penalty box. I mean, that was key for them, and that's what they've got to do again tonight. They can't get goaded into anything stupid, and that's why it was so important that Justin saw the bigger picture at the end of Game 3 and didn't engage in any foolish stuff where we're boring.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and did that surprise you? Because I know Tampa Bay center Brian Boyle, I mean, he skated toward the locker room at the end of Game 3, flapping his arms, you know, like a chicken, indicating that Justin Applicator was too chicken to fight him. And Applicator said that he gladly would have obliged, only that fighting with a taped hand calls for a game misconduct. How odd was that series as the game ended?
Well, you know, I mean, that was Justin remembering what Jeff Bosch was holding before the game. Jeff told all of them, you know, he doesn't want them fighting, and Justin especially. And it was the right decision because Brasher was right. Applicator is far more important for them to have in the lineup than him, you know, fighting for, you know, 20 seconds at the end of a game they had already won. I mean, it was Brian Boyle trying to get under his skin and trying to goad Applicator into doing something stupid that would hurt his team. And that's part of what these playoffs are about. You know, you try to aggravate the other team into doing something stupid.
Now, you know, something that was fascinating to me when watching that game on Sunday, Helene, was that Tyler Johnson, Nikita Kucherov, and Alex Killorn, of course, those three, that line, combined for 15 points in the first two games, but didn't even register a shot on net in that 2-0 loss. How were the Wings able to neutralize those three?
Well, that's the benefit of getting last change, and even, you know, if they were changing on the fly, Jeff had made it very clear to everybody on the team, look, if Tyler Johnson's group is out there, he wanted Luke Clendenning, Riley Shahan, and Justin Applicator out against them. Clendenning adds a lot of speed, and he's a good pass, and Shahan and Applicator are the two biggest, heaviest forwards on the team. So that's what they were able to do. Now, they can get that matchup again tonight, and, you know, let's see if they manage to play two good games back-to-back. That's been a problem for them all season. But they're still at some point going to have to win on the road and figure out a way to contain that line in Tampa Bay. But the other thing, you know, from Tampa's perspective, they can't be happy that so far they've relied entirely on one line and Ben Bishop. I mean, you know, they're going to look to get more guys going tonight for sure.
Yeah, and you know, the playoffs is all about adjustments, Helene. I mean, it's going to be a tall order for the Wings to sort of duplicate what happened on Sunday, right?
Yeah, I mean, I doubt they'll hold Tampa to 16 shots again. But, you know, this is where you can also look to Mrazek. I mean, hopefully he won't have to, but he is capable of stealing a game, and that's another advantage they have with him, and that maybe at some point he makes a difference. I mean, Ben Bishop has been very, very good for Tampa, and, you know, that's significant for them given they have some incredible injuries up front in them. I mean, they're missing their leading goal scorer and their second-best defenseman.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Detroit Red Wings beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, Helene St. James. You can read her work at freep.com and also follow her on Twitter at Helene St. James. Helene, when you look at, you know, rookie Andreas Athanasiou, who's so fun to watch, and especially in Game 3, he was able to get loose a little bit and had a really, really sexy spin move that, of course, didn't find the back of the net, but really made every highlight reel that we saw that night. How was Athanasiou able to have such a big impact in Game 3, and just how talented is this young player?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, his asset is speed, and more speed, and, you know, he keeps finding. I mean, that's one of the things Jeff talks about when asked why he isn't playing more, it's that he can do a lot in a very short amount of time and in getting just two or three shifts a game, so... Now, we'll see tonight. Maybe he tries him a little bit on the power play, especially if things aren't going well. I mean, that's, you know, they blow a minute long two or 59-second two-man advantage Sunday. I thought that was a bad sign, that maybe it wasn't going to go that way. They need to figure out, I mean, special teams are crucial in the playoffs, and at this point, I don't think they could do less with FNCU and one of their power play units than what they've been doing. So, you know, and I know they were considering, it doesn't look like it's happening tonight, but they were considering putting Timo Pulkkinen in. And, but there, I mean, Athanasiou has done very well, and Dylan Larkin has done very well, responded after he judged himself not to have played well in Game 1 and had a goal in Game 2 and some big hits. The guys that they're really missing are Nyquist and Tatar. I mean, Tatar especially, I know he has 3 assists, but he hasn't been doing anything as far as shooting the puck.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, it's certainly in a bit of a drought. And I want to go back because I read prior to that game three on Sunday, I read your piece in the Free Press, Helene, entitled Wings Must Win at Home to Have a Fighting Chance. And I want to go back to a comment that you made about rookie Dylan Larkin. You said this, quote, rookie Dylan Larkin, who at 19 is schooling older teammates on how to show up in the playoffs, speculated the Wings sent the Lightning a message, quote, we are here to battle, end quote. Can you talk about, you know, Larkin's impact in game two being a rallying point for this team to set the table to do what they did in game three? What was Larkin able to do to really set that tone, as you mentioned in your piece, Helene?
Well, I mean, he showed, you know, what the Wings have loved about him since they drafted him. And he's capable of stepping up in big situations. And, you know, he said afterwards, you know, he was upset because people were calling him a wuss on Twitter after game one. And that's how he responded. And that's what I meant when I said schooling. It's like, why? I mean, Nyquist has not been good enough. Tatar's not been good enough. They see a 19-year-old, a guy that's 5-6 years younger than they are, respond the way he did. You know, they need to take some of that as an example for themselves. Now, Larkin is a special, special guy. I mean, very high-end skill, and again, he's got very speedy legs as well. So, but just the way, you know, I mean, like, he's been such, it's incredible what an impact he's had on the team. I mean, Larkin was a leading goal scorer during the regular season. Not as much production down the stretch, but overall fairly consistent. For a 19-year-old getting used to the grind of the NHL. So, you know, I mean, in many respects, I would say Mlasic, until the wheels kind of came off there with the MVP, but Larkin has been a tremendous factor for them and continues to be that in the playoffs.
So true. So, Helene, what adjustments can we look for tonight when it comes to both the Wings and the Lightning?
Well, I would say, you know, watch the first couple minutes, see what Tampa's going to try and do, and the Wings look like they're going to build off game three rather than, you know, pull one of their, well, we played well last game, so take tonight off. You know, or, I mean, are they going to go back to playing part-time? Which so far, they've done well in this series. They've started really well both games in Tampa as well. So just, you know, can they build on game four and, you know, just continue to bear down, stay out of the penalty box? You know, they're fairly evenly matched overall, these teams, just with injuries Tampa has, but you know, it'll be interesting to see which Wings team shows up tonight.
And you mentioned those injuries, of course. The Lightning entering this series a bit beat up. Anton Strawman and Steve Stamkos not playing. How bad do you think this Lightning team is missing both Strawman and Stamkos in this series, Helene?
Oh, without question. And I mean, especially, you know, one of your second best defensemen. That's a significant loss to try to have to make up for. And I mean, Stamkos didn't do a lot against the Wings in the first round last year as well, but a lot of times in the playoffs, you know, your top lines kind of cancel one another out. But no doubt the Lightning wish they had him available. And, you know, from the other perspective, I mean, if the Wings can't take advantage of a team that has those kind of injuries, they should, you know, that's not a very good indication of where they're at if they can't take advantage of that and get out of this round.
I totally agree with you. All right, Helene, before we get you out of here, what was the atmosphere like? Again, this is the 25th straight year that the Detroit Red Wings have made the playoffs. It's the longest postseason streak in North American sports history right now. Active streak, I should say, in North American sports history right now. Helene, what was the atmosphere like at the Joe, the Wings, again, back in the playoffs? I'm pretty sure it had to be a bit insane in the membrane.
on Sunday, it was absolutely amazing, and you know, Brendan Smith made a point of saying that today. He said, you know, we do hear players try to concentrate on what's on the ice, of course, but they did hear. And I mean, it was an incredibly fun and electric atmosphere. And, you know, I'm sure fans will try to pull off the same tonight. Now it was, you know, first playoff game of the series at home. But that's certainly something the Wings would need to feed off if that atmosphere can be the same. But yeah, it's a very fun time of year to be covering hockey.
It definitely is. And this is this accurate, Helene? I read something in the paper that noted that a few fans were actually throwing octopus on the ice.
Yeah, I mean, they always throw it at the end of the anthem, which is okay because the game hasn't begun yet. You don't want to throw stuff on the ice once games have begun, or even somebody threw them at the start of the third period. You can risk the home team being penalized and such. Try Googling plastic rats in Florida earlier this season. They gave them out as commemorative little fan things, and fans just hurled them onto the ice nonstop. So,
oh man.
So yeah, you know, you have to be careful about that and show your be careful when they land, because I mean, you don't want to put the wings with the man in the penalty box, but that's potentially what the league can do if it becomes an issue.
Right. Well, let's be smart Wings fans out there listening, all right? All right. Aline St. James, Detroit Red Wings beat writer for the Free Press. Again, you can read her work at freep.com and follow her on Twitter at Helene St. James. Helene, thanks so much. Looking forward to checking out your piece when the dust settles in game four tonight.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will chat about a former U of M football coach who is seemingly coming to the aid of the current U of M football coach, Jim Harbaugh, when it comes to, of course, what other subject are we going to be talking about? Satellite camps. That and so much more. Do not, don't you do it. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. If you're just now joining us, you missed a treat. We just finished chatting with Helene St. James of the Detroit Free Press. She, of course, covers the Detroit Red Wings. She does a fantastic job with the Freep. It was great hearing her insight as the Wings will take on the Tampa Bay Lightning in round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs, game four tonight at the Joe Louis Arena. 7 p.m. is puck drop, and according to Helene, Peter Mrazek will be making another start. He started in game three. Howard started the first two games, but Peter Mrazek, again, he didn't have to, you know, do a lot of work in that game in game three. But nonetheless, again, he gets the shutout, they get the dub, and he seems to be the man going into game four tonight as well. You know what, Isaac? I'm a bit ashamed to say that my 25 years on this earth living here in Michigan, I have never been to Joe Louis Arena to enjoy a Red Wings hockey game. Isn't that, that's horrible, isn't it?
Really?
Never. Okay. Never been. Have you ever been? Have you?
I've never been to a hockey game here. Actually,
gotcha. Well, do you guys have a team down there?
We used to. We had a minor league team, the New Orleans Jesters, when I was growing up. And okay. I actually did go to one of those games, but that's all I've been to. I've never been to an actual NHL game.
Right. Wow. Well, we're in the same bucket then, man. I'm going to have to,
and
especially with the Joe. The Joe, of course, will only be up one more season. Of course, the downtown Detroit, they are building that Detroit Red Wings district, which looks like it's going to be one of the craziest athletic venues in the world, not just here in America. I'm really looking forward to that. But before the Wings stop playing at the Joe, I got to check out a game next year. That's going to be a special year. So much history in that building. And you heard Helene's thoughts going into game four between the Wings and Lightning. This is going to be a fun game, I think, Isaac. Again, the playoffs are all about adjustments. You won't see, you know, the Lightning with only, 16 shots on goal in this one, okay? Adjustments are going to be made. I think that line that I keep mentioning when it comes to, you know, Tyler Johnson and Alex Killorn, Nikita Kucherov, I think those guys are going to come out with the chip on their shoulder. Looking at what occurred in Game 3, they're going to be more aggressive, I think, in this game. It's already been a physical series. I think we've seen the last two games, we've seen two fights already break out. So these teams don't like each other, and that makes always for good television and a great series. It's going to be a very tight game, and the Wings are going to have that even-keel focus like they did in Game 3 if they're going to have a shot in this series.
Well, you mentioned this is a coaching battle now that both teams have won all games on their home ice. So
right.
Basically, in my opinion, this is just a parry and counterattack type event. So we'll see if the Red Wings stick with it or try to switch it up a little bit, because I thought that we saw a much more aggressive team last night. Maybe the Tampa Bay Lightning come out, though, and try to immediately get on the front foot, maybe make a lot of switches, or just stick with their main guns, try to stay as talented as they can on the ice at all times and forget freshness. So we'll see what happens. It should be an interesting game.
Yeah, and the young pups have to continue to really make their presence known. Justin Ablicator, Gustav Nyquist, Tomas Tatar. You heard Helene talk about how Tomas Tatar needs to really get out the funk that he's in and needs to score. Dylan Larkin, who's really been a firecracker in this series. Andreas Athanasiou, we all know about his performance in Game 3. And also Anthony Mantha as well. So we'll see. It's going to be a fun game tonight. Again, puck drop is 7 p.m. For Game 4 between the Lightning and the Wings. Also want to pass this news along to you all. Johnny Manziel has officially been dropped by his agent 5 days after Drew Rosenhaus gave the QB an ultimatum, get help within 5 days or you are fired. Rosenhaus issued the ultimatum on Wednesday, but 2 days later, Manziel touched down at Coachella, which of course is like a big music concert series where he partied his face off with Josh Gordon. Clearly, the choice rubbed Rosenhaus the wrong way, and the agent officially cut ties with Johnny today, as first reported by ESPN's Adam Schefter. Man, I got to tell you, Isaac, there's a part of me that says, yeah, Johnny, you need to wake up, dude. I hope this is a wake-up call for you. But there's also a part of me that says, you know what? I really feel bad for this guy because I really thought when Johnny came into the league, he's a talent. I loved watching him when he was in college. But and even when he was in college, he was a big headache because of off-the-field issues, partying, just getting, you know, just outlandish. You know what I mean? And I thought that when he went away and he went to rehab, and he acknowledged that he had a problem, I thought that was the turning point for Johnny Manziel to get back on the wagon and say, you know what? I've been doing it the wrong way. That was my wake-up call. And I thought that going to rehab would change him. That clearly has not happened. And it always rubs me the wrong way. And, you know, I feel bad for the guy, but it also ticks me off. Anytime I see a guy who has the world handed to him, you're a supreme athlete, you were drafted high, you're making good money, but you decide to just throw it away because you can't keep yourself in check. You know what I mean? Do the things that you need to do morally to gain the respect of your teammates, to gain the respect of the upper echelons in your organization, and even your agent. You can't even do that right. So, there's a part of me that feels bad about the potential of where Johnny Manziel could have reached, but there's also a part of me that says, you know what, man, hey. You brought this on yourself.
I'm done. I mean, the guy's sick. He's morbid. He needs a sort of clinic or whatever needs to turn him around.
Isn't that crazy? He went to rehab. You know what I mean?
He was at rehab. He's not even trying at this point to go to Coachella with Josh Gordon. I mean, listen, I don't want to mince words. People, when they go to Coachella, they go to party. And he went to party and do a lot more than just dance to music.
He was in Vegas, I know, not too long ago, partying his brains out.
It's frustrating, but I'm done feeling bad for the guy. He needs to go get help and turn his life around because he was a role model for kids. He had the world at his fingertips, and he had it handed to him. You think somebody like this works their butt off to get where they are? No, this guy had a ton of natural talent and compounded that with hard work on the football field. But there are so many guys who have done it better, who have worked harder, and deserve to be where he is to have gotten the contract that he did and didn't just because he's more talented. He threw it away. I don't feel bad for the guy.
Yeah, and it's actually the second agent to terminate Manziel since February, with agent Eric Bernhardt dropping Johnny Manziel after 2 years together, saying he didn't believe he could any longer help the star player. So Johnny Manziel, just one headache after another. All right, 5 minutes left in the show. If you want to call in, get a quick call in, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Got to bring this one up, folks. As more college football coaches speak out, lamenting the loss of satellite camps, one of the most vocal came Monday. Arizona coach Rich Rodriguez, who used to be the coach of the University of Michigan football program. Even though he didn't mention Michigan directly, it seems as though he falls on the side of Jim Harbaugh and company, saying, quote, "I don't know how that rule passed so quickly. I understand if we table it and look at it for a year, but to table it because a few SEC or ACC schools don't want to have it is not fair to a lot of coaches, a lot of programs, and more importantly, to the student athletes." And I totally agree with Rich Rod. I totally agree with Jim Harbaugh And, you know, it's so interesting. I had DeAndre Carter on Current Sports TV last week, and he echoed my same sentiments when discussing satellite camps and this whole ruling. You know, basically, I loved how Harbaugh came out. You know, after a few days of letting the news, you know, just kind of soak into the media atmosphere, he decided to come out and say, you know what? I'm going to comment on this. And I think that this was a ruling in which a bunch of guys, you know, who are so eminent when it comes to college football, some of the top coaches in the game who happen to coach at SEC schools, sitting around smoking cigars, not happy about what's taking place, not happy that the idea didn't come from them, and, you know, saying what, basically come out and saying, you know what, if you know, we can't do it, no one should do it. You know what I mean? So, you know, just a bunch of guys, it's basically a power trip, you know, if you will. And I also thought it was telling, and I totally agree with Jim Harbaugh when he said that, you know what, these other coaches are just lazy. They don't want to put in the work. And I totally agree with him. You know what I mean? You know, if when you're doing something against the grain that isn't the norm, and you're going out there and throwing satellite camps and constantly, you know, working to try and woo recruits, shouldn't other coaches just step up the game and say, you know what, okay, if this guy's doing it, I must be doing something wrong here. I need to step up my game to compete with this guy because he's doing something that's working. And I totally agree, you know, because we deal with a lot of laziness, just not in the, even in the world of sports, Isaac, but in the game of life. When you see someone outworking you, you know, you get kind of taken aback and say, oh, man, I don't know if I want to work that hard. So you know what? We should just change the rules to make it even for everybody. And that's exactly what Harbaugh was addressing. I thought it was very candid. I really did.
Yeah, I think Rich Rod, too, the way he put it, was very diplomatic. But I just don't agree with this ruling whatsoever. I don't care if it happened today, tomorrow, in right. 10 years, in 100 years.
It was a knee-jerk Sadly. Ruling. It exactly. happened so quick, like Rich Rod said. I'm like, dude, like in a few weeks you make this ruling? Like,
this
yeah, again, let
so
it marinate.
Spontaneous. There was no know. Thinking about this because, like you said, I think this comes down to apathy from Southern coaches because pretty much – they've got all the talent fall right in their lap, and suddenly that doesn't happen anymore. Somebody puts in more work than they do, spends more resources than they do. They still have the home field advantage. They still should be getting all of these kids. Mm-hmm. But Jim Harbaugh puts on such a spectacle, such a great presentation for these guys. They want to go to Michigan, and that's kudos to him, and that's a discredit to the Southern coaches. This is nothing that he did wrong. This is something that they had the power in their hands, so they used it. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it definitely is. And again, I want to read the direct quote that came from Jim Harbaugh. He says, quote, "You've got a guy sitting in a big house making $5 million a year saying he does not want to sacrifice his time. That is not a kindred spirit to me. What most of these coaches are saying is that they don't want to work harder." Man, talk about sticking it to him. That's a great quote. That's a great quote right there, and I totally agree with him. So we'll expound on this on tomorrow's show, and you don't want to miss tomorrow's show as we will be inviting live in our studio a dear friend of the show, Anthony Iani, a former Michigan State men's basketball player who is now a motivational speaker. He's one of the biggest motivational speakers in the nation, actually, and he's a huge advocate for autism as well. It is Autism Awareness Month. We'll have Anthony Iani live in studio with us. I want to give a special thanks to Helene St. James of the Detroit Free Press for joining me on today's show and all of you out there for tuning in and listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. Have a fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.